I dare to deprive you of free speech.
Yes, you mustn't do that.
Imagine that I'm from out of space and I've never been to Speaker's Corner. How would you describe it to me?
I'd probably defend you because there'd be so many people telling you to clear off, matter where you came from. I'd probably feel that it was my job to sort of defend your right to be here.
I think as a capitalist, what I do is try and capture you and sell you to one of the tabloids and make a bloody fortune out of I've Got a Spaceman.
If I was still in the dark about Speaker's Corner, how would you enlighten me?
Round the Marble Arch, round the Marble Arch. It's a place where a lot of people go and express their silly selves.
It was a mythical place.
It was a very intensely political forum,
a marketplace for ideas.
It has the reputation as being the largest open-air lunatic asylum in the world.
It's ghetto, it's raw, it's bare-knuckle fighting.
Speaker's Corner is like some vast argumentative cocktail party.
Other people go there to enjoy the open-air theatre, as it were.
As you approach Speaker's Corner from Marble Arch, it's like a cannonade of voices getting louder and louder. It looks like a down-at-heel gentleman's club gathering under the plane trees, the speakers standing head and shoulders above the crowd. The hecklers sniping at them from the floor.
Where will your soul be?
Oh, Kendall Rice Cemetery.
And swarming everywhere, preachers calling down the wrath of God.
I say, oh God, I'm going to hell, I need to repent.
In 1939, there were 100 open-air speaking places in London alone. Hyde Park is the last relic of this unruly style of face-to-face debate.
There was something about these people. I mean, what makes somebody want to come down week after week and behave in that way?
My name's Laura Mitchison from On The Record. And that's a question that guided us during our oral history of this unique Sunday performance. We looked behind the babble of voices to find out why people started gathering under the plane trees and why they still come today. Ted Wheatley, speaker on world government since 1960.
You know that the spot where you're treading is just about the most blood-soaked spot in Britain. Here, murder happened on a daily basis. That was why behind me there used to be a gallows, a gibbet where people were hanged by the neck until they were dead. They called it Tyburn.
I'm Marko Stepanov. I'm originally from what used to be Yugoslavia, and I came to London in 1986. The first place I visited was a Speaker's Corner. I remember I took off my shoes and socks and I walked bare feet, as that was a holy land for me. It was a mythical place. Later on, you see that lots of things are not as you assumed or believed.
Ted Wheatley again.
The prisoners tended to come from the other side of London, and they would come in a horse and cart, and they made a big fuss of the prisoner. Prisoner who was going to die that day wore his best clothes, of course. And sometimes publicans would give them glasses of beer as they went on. And sometimes the crowd cheered, sometimes they threw things at them, but they were tied in the cart. And they went right through London along what's now Oxford Street. Eventually they got to Speaker's Corner, and the hangman would put the noose around the neck. But at some stage, they were allowed to make their last speeches. Probably they would have been talking quite a lot, as they didn't have any opportunity to curse those who were killing them. And that's how Speaker's Corner was born.
Between the people who are regulars, we called ourselves Tybernites. We gather in Tyburn Meadow.
I expect most convicts were too terrified or too drunk to speak from the scaffold. Those rebels who did denounce their killers were cut off in mid-flow, literally. But the link between Hyde Park and Popular Voice was forged. Thousands of people defied a government ban on meeting in the park during the Reform League demonstrations of 1866 and 1867, 99 years after the last highwayman was executed at Tyburn. A law was passed in 1872, giving us a qualified right to speak in Hyde Park. Speaker's Corner regular, Bob Rogers.
What must be made clear is that the legislation does not itself use the words free speech or freedom of speech, but essentially that is implied because it's not denied in the legislation. And this seems to have worked quite effectively over, well, in excess now of 100 years.
We had the most glorious meeting. Mrs. Whitburn Allen chained herself to the wheel of the Prime Minister's carriage. You should have been there.
Mrs. Banks, I would like a word.
We're clearly soldiers in petty coats and dauntless crusaders for women's votes. Though we adore men individually, we agree that as a group they're rather stupid.
See Jarrow March, viewers.
Work, work, we want work. Down with the means test, slave camps and all the rest. Work, work, we don't shirk. Work to feed our bands and wives.
In the 20th century, every political movement from the suffragettes to the CND put out their stall here. Everywhere you turn, banners and placards are still vying for your attention. My favourites are Tony Allen's Advocate Heckler, Anarchist Parasite, Mixed Ability Shaman, and Bob Rogers' laminated news clipping, It's Going to Get Worse.
It felt like a marketplace for ideas. And just as you go to a marketplace and turn things over and see if you like them or not, so you could move around from one place to another, and that was one of the features of it.
The controversial Methodist Donald Soper had the loudest and longest standing stall in the marketplace, from 1926 up to his death in 1998.
And it is in the hands of democratic power. And well, it's the whole point, that's why I'm making it. That is exactly what I'm saying. And there is no need to turn this into a duet.
Soper's scepticism about the virgin birth and tirades against the arms trade ruffled feathers on all sides. Leslie Griffiths and Kath Humphreys were both greatly influenced.
Donald was very controversial, especially during the war years. He was accused of all kinds of things, and the Home Office were very suspicious of him.
Oh, the first time I heard Monte, I was shocked to the core. I didn't think a Methodist minister could be so rude. You know, we were brought up, ministers were good, nice people. When I heard Soper letting rip, but you realise all part of the act. He used to call it the Fellowship of Controversy. He liked a good argument.
They always say that Donald was the finest open-air orator since John Wesley in Methodism. And like John Wesley, when he went the first time to certain places, they threw excrement, dead dogs and dead cats at him. But by the time he was finished, they had the town crier out, bringing him in as a grand old man and organising a street party around him. And that's what happened to Donald.
I worked in Woolwich Arsenal for 10 years and waved the flag and was very patriotic. But listening to old Soper, he could be very, very convincing and persuasive. My sister and I became fervent pacifists. You see, we weren't intellectual people. I suppose we were ripe to be influenced. I don't know if I'm very easily influenced. I don't think anybody will ever make me a Tory. But then, you see, to a certain extent, Soper appealed to ordinary people because he was the only minister I'd ever heard who spoke ordinary language, not theological or ecclesiastical.
Communist, any other regime, are as busy as they can selling guns to anybody who can buy them. And he's absolutely wicked.
And I'll buy one.
One?
I will buy one gun.
You'll buy one gun.
And bring it here.
And bring it here. You know, I've seen a decline, actually catastrophic. You were talking quite sensibly 5 minutes ago.
Lots of people milling around and listening and talking and arguing, debating. It wasn't just listening. They were stimulated by the ideas. You got that feeling that the ideas were exciting.
Edna Mathiasen was a regular in the 1940s and 50s. She co-authored a biography of the charismatic socialist orator Tony Turner. Turner's message was given an odd tinge by his exotic fruit habit.
I remember Turner as a man who used to have an orange, who would peel it and split it up into quarters, I think, and put a whole quarter in his mouth, because that was the thing that somewhat amazed me, a whole quarter of an orange going to someone's mouth. We lived in poverty, let me get that quite clear, like many others. To have an orange would have been unusual. It would only have happened at Christmas. It would have happened at no other time. There was a person who had an orange and was eating it in such a way.
The marketplace of ideas certainly moves with history.
In your perfect ideal socialist state, egalitarian state, how do you prevent people from taking power?
Now, I've got nothing against these Americans, nothing at all. In fact, they make such wonderful pets, these Americans. Everybody should own one. But for God's sake, keep them on a strong lead.
Now, these guys who went away to fight in this Vietnam War...
Imperialism and the Cold War were hotly debated in the 50s and 60s.
If I had any sense, I'd have went to jail instead of going there. The Vietnamese never did any bad things to me, or anybody else for that matter. They were victims of capitalist colonialism.
Asia belongs to the Asians. Africa belongs to the Africans. I knew this dirty gringos.
Identity politics in the 80s and 90s.
Tragedy of being made to feel guilty about one's sexuality.
Let's get real. If Jesus Christ came back and arrived in England today, he'd need a visa.
Yeah. Arguments about the Middle East and Islam fly through the air today.
Hell is a suspected terrorist. In fact, Jesus Christ looks like Osama bin Laden.
But Speaker's Corner remains its own bubble. Many ideas are completely unrelated to the headlines. Heiko Kuh, Marxist speaker since 1986.
It's not that suddenly something happens in the world and lots of people turn up at Speaker's Corner. They don't. You still have to get the bug to individually want to go there and speak and want to set up some connection with people who are there.
Gentlemen, this is Democracy Manifest. Have a look at the headlock here. See that chap over there? Get your hand off my...
I used to think that people at Speaker's Corner could say whatever they wanted. But it's illegal to swear, solicit donations, and, God forbid, insult the Queen. In 1968, Roy Saw, speaker on racism and immigration, was arrested for something he couldn't have foreseen. It was the height of apartheid.
I was speaking in Hyde Park, and then somebody said to me, "Oh, Roy, you're talking a lot about, you know, Africa and, you know, what you black people should have done and what you, if you were in South Africa, how would you solve the problem?" And I said, "Oh, very easy." He said, "What do you mean? Mandela went to jail, he's in jail. Everybody is in jail. How could you solve it?" I said, "Look, it's simple. Every white family in South Africa has a black cook. 2 ounces of rat poison and you can solve the problem overnight." You have to be humorous to keep your audience, because nobody will stand there for 3 hours and listen.
"I'm inciting racial hatred. But why don't you call a policeman and let him arrest me? If you arrest me and you put me in prison, who's bothered? It's so easy to get out. Goodbye."
The police came and arrested me, took me to Hyde Park police station, and I was charged for inciting racial violence, 4 charges. And I didn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. I said, "But this is freedom of speech. Hyde Park is free. You can stand up and say whatever you want to say." And then I said to the magistrate, I said, "Look, how can a minority group incite racial violence against a majority when the laws came out in the first place to protect us?" I don't think he listened to me. So I got £120 fine and 3 months in prison on each charge. So that was 12 months.
"Are you bathed in the serenity that can come only from smoky potatoes?"
51 years ago, they said to me, "Let's only a 5-minute wonder.
I'm gonna hold me glory, let's look join the sun.
Are you very sure?
I'm sorry
that?
To disappoint you. I know you fancy me. I know you love me. But I've got news for you. I was homosexual, but when I saw you, I changed my mind.
The danger is that somebody may at some time, God forbid, take me seriously.
Not everyone came to Speaker's Corner with a message or a mission to convert. Bob Rogers and his friend Norman Schlund had a different sort of presence.
It was a place, it has the reputation as being the largest open-air lunatic asylum in the world. That's a big claim, but it did facilitate people whose lives perhaps had been disturbed and disorientated by the war, because it was a place of refuge for them.
I don't come here to change the world. Not this week. I'll do that next week.
Now, Norman was a man who had served through the war. I could imagine that Norman would have made a very good sergeant. He wasn't particularly tall. In fact, he was of quite short stature. He regularly wore a flat cap and a green anorak. He had an enormous mouth, and he had enormous hands. And he used his mouth and his hands and his whole body to speak. And it was a form of mime show. And essentially, Norman was talking about nothing. Now, to talk about nothing for an entire Sunday afternoon is not something which is lightly undertaken. And I was in awe of the man.
Chris Kennett, spectator and photographer since 1961.
Now, Norman, he would stand there with one leg outstretched. He would stand grimacing, and he spoke in a series of what I can only describe as non sequiturs. I think if I give you an example of it, you'll understand me.
I may be accused of oversimplifying a very difficult issue.
But they never, ever accused me of burning the cakes.
One of his regular sayings was, appearances up must be kept. And Norman was somebody whose appearance would belie his homelessness, and I must emphasise this. You wouldn't realise that he was a homeless person. And two of the people, well, we're not forgetting Norman, but two of the people who I suppose they each in their own way deserve a medal were the two women who ran the tea bar in those days. Because amongst these people, the soft underbelly as it were a lot of people who were homeless, who had mental health problems, and some people were starving, and a sandwich or two given out at the end of the day, and a cup of tea and coffee for nothing, probably saved a few lives.
I want to see people in heaven.
If I go to heaven, I want to know that they've got an equal opportunity policy.
Yeah!
Yes.
Who wrote it? You never tell an Irishman who wrote it. Who wrote it? We know more about the English language than you do.
You've been muttering absolute gibberish.
Yes! Where were you in 1939?
I wasn't even an unplanned addition to the welfare state then.
Chris Kennett.
The hecklers, they were the bane of some speakers' lives, but they were able to draw a crowd. There were people there who enjoyed listening to the hecklers as much as listening to the speaker. And I mean, I was one of them. I'd follow the hecklers. For me, that was great entertainment.
Hecklers and their heckles come in all shapes and sizes. Ruth Eastwood, who first visited with her grandfather in the 1940s, asks challenging questions.
I pull everything apart to see if it's true, rather like the British kite mark. You test the seatbelt and it doesn't get the mark until it has passed certain tests. But you are pulling apart and testing it with pressure because you want to see its strength, not because you want to destroy it.
Most heckling is less honourable. Stock jokes.
Your brain has the hard cutting edge of a rotten banana, for instance.
Cutting one-liners.
You need a haircut and a shave. Don't you?
I dare say your mother needs a bloody shave as well, looking at you.
She was probably a gorilla, wasn't she?
Or simply bellowing until the speakers give up.
When by his I shall
Chris Kennett recalls two fearsome hecklers, Mary and Lord Barker.
There was one in particular I remember whose name was Mary, and she was a very, very small woman, but she was really, really quite vicious. She came on crutches and she'd barge her way through the crowd and she'd stand right at the front and she'd jeer at the speaker. Didn't matter what colour or creed, she'd always find a way of antagonising them. But there was another one I remember whose name was Lord Barker, he liked to call himself, and he came across as a bit of a toff. He was all smartly dressed with a rolled up umbrella and he had an upper class accent. He was nobody really, he was just a newspaper vendor by day, but once he was at speakers, he livened up a meeting. He tried to get rid of Mary one day when she was coming over and he'd say out loud, he'd say, "Officer, officer, arrest this woman, arrest this woman."
Mary and Lord Barker had a lifelong vocation to be hecklers, but the roles were not always cut and dried. Lots of the best speakers began their career as hecklers. Tony Allen, anarchist performer.
I used to heckle Barry Roberts in the sort of late 70s. I think in 1978, he finally said, "Get up and do it then." And I was just guilt-tripped into doing it, and I stood up and started swearing. To be honest, I suppose I wanted to get arrested because I had nothing else to say once I said a few swear words and celebrated sexual intercourse.
My undergrad was in heckling, and so my undergrad in heckling gave me that foundation when I became a speaker to know exactly what the life of the heckler was and know how to destabilise the heckler.
Ismail Blagrove, speaker on race and international relations, who cut his teeth in the 1980s, heckling racist characters like Lord Barker.
And I want to tell you, when we get into power, the Conservative Party, we're going to make sure these black people swing back on these branches where they came from. And I am not racist.
Jeez, oh God, the old ones back in the day. In Africa and Asia, we've got gold, diamonds, uranium, titanium, cobalt, oil, copper, iron, lead, silver, rice, coffee, cocoa, tea. In Europe, you have fish and chips and homosexuality.
The culture of Speaker's Corner is to heckle. I mean, there's no other forum like Speaker's Corner. I mean, where you've got an audience that are browsing, really, that can just move away at any time because there's another speaker within yards. And that audience is hosting sort of snipers who will make a few remarks and then they'll move on. They're completely unaccountable.
Tony Allen later got a grant from the Arts Council to heckle on behalf of people who were too shy or too lazy.
It's ghetto, it's raw, it's bare-knuckle fighting. It's not standard debate and conversation. You know what I'm saying? There are no holds barred in this. This is bare-knuckle cage fighting of the oratory field. You get your PhD there, you go anywhere. The hecklers are quality control. Other than that, you'd have any person to stand up and speak. These guys are the gatekeepers.
John Palmer, a socialist who spoke in the late 50s and 60s, recalls a classic put-down.
There was a Scottish anarchist who was a giant of a man, Big Jim something or other, and he used a barrel chest, I always remember, and a very, very powerful voice. And he got fed up with these hecklers after a while, and he suddenly yelled out, "Silence!" He said, "I remember when men were men, women were women, and dirty wee things like you were dirty wee things like you."
The rough-and-tumble style seems to bring out extremes in people. Regulars talk about adopting personas or alter egos.
You're not in a character, you're in a version of yourself and you're talking directly to the audience as a performer.
I don't think the part really reflects who I am as a human being. A lot of it has now become theatre. That character's almost become my alter ego. Like, that character smokes. I don't.
But I want to warn you, there's many Arabs in this park who have been stealing sheets and pillowcases from the Dorchester Hotel.
Barker was that acceptable representation of what racism was within society. Barker himself was that character. I actually thought he was a real lord because I didn't really engage with many white people. And so seeing a white man with a bowler hat and pinstripe suit, I assumed he was a real lord. And he'd greet you with, "Hello, Nignog, how are you?"
a loony knock. And in fact, you know, the funny thing was, I was never offended by him because he'd say it with a smile on his face. And so it was actually kind of warm and welcoming. A loony knock. His character represented that element of the society because, you know, Speaker's Corner is that cross-section of society.
Abdurrahim Green, Speaker on Islam.
Yeah, I thought a lot about how to dress. Shall I just wear normal clothes? Because I don't want to present my message as being something that is like abnormal, right? This is just actually something that anybody could accept it. But then on the other hand, it was a distinctive message. Anyway, what won the day for me, going for the Islamic clothes most of the time, was just the effect on the crowd. You know, especially if I stood up in my white long garment with my beard and my sort of long blonde hair, right? Oh my God, it's like it's Jesus standing there. Actually, I had someone actually come to me in Speaker's Corner and said, if you told me you're the Lord, I'd believe you. It's dangerous. You know, you could form a cult.
I don't want to go to heaven. I'm going to go to hell with a pair of bongo drum and a bass guitar.
Anders Breivik is a wonderful guy for you. How can you be drinking alcohol at 7 o'clock in the morning?
You've flown your union flag upside down.
Well,
yes, it's upside down like you.
This man tells the worst Jewish jokes in the world.
This guy, he tells the best Jewish jokes.
Yeah.
Anybody against this is an enemy of the state. Anybody against this is an enemy of the crowd.
So what's the future of Speaker's Corner in an age of social media? Do we still need face-to-face debate? Abdurrahim Green.
It really is a really good training ground to develop your public speaking skills. You know, how to engage your audience, how to think on your feet. And even if you don't want to speak, it's a great place to go and meet people and talk to people and engage in conversation. Some of the best conversations I had in Speaker's Corner were down from the ladder.
John Fitter, Speaker on Veganism and the Middle East since 1992.
It's great to use the internet, but every now and then get off the keyboard and go and use your mouth instead.
A lot of people do really genuinely go down there because they want to find, you know, they're looking for something. They're looking for some answers to the big questions in life. And so what better place to go down and engage with people on that level?
The last word belongs to Patrick McAvoy, a carpenter by trade, who started speaking from a beautifully crafted box in 2011. He wanted to start a debate about why people were not earning a fair wage in the global economy.
I would give gratitude for it existing. You have the option to go down and just say, I don't know what's going on, you know. Does anyone else know? Because Google doesn't have an answer for me. If I type that into Google, I'll get some health farm that's charging me 15 grand, or I'll get some spiritual guru that'll fly me halfway across the world and have me jumping over burning flames and all. You know, just go down at grassroots, ask people who are predominantly probably in the same position as yourself, and you know what? They answer the question.
Before we go, I think we did ought to invite everybody who's listening to this, in their tens probably, to come along to Speaker's Corner and judge for themselves.
All five of you, start the revolution now.
There's a social democrat telling you to start a revolution.
We're sure to find out.